You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You just found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. What we want. You're listening to On the Couch, On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
Michelle Cohen, and you are officially
my friends all laughed at me
on the couch.
They said you never change.
It's all about change.
I wonder if they're happy now.
And it's about us changing ourselves as well. Can't change anybody else. Welcome, everybody. Hey, let me ask you something. Do you believe that Shakespeare was right when he said that the eyes are the window to the soul, right? You've always heard the sayings, it's all in the eyes, you know. Look in their eyes. Well, there may be more truth to that particular concept than you can imagine. You're going to hear about a revolutionary new brain therapy today. And it works on the premise that where you literally look with your eyes affects how you feel. And today, you've got to listen to this show, guys, because you're going to learn about unlocking and releasing not only past trauma, but also a huge spectrum of psychological and physical issues. And we can apply this to so many different things in terms of physiological performance, athletes, entertainers, and just general stuff going on in your life. So let's get going with it here. My special guest today is Dr. David Grand. He's a licensed clinical social worker. He's author of the book Brain Spotting, the Revolutionary New Therapy for Rapid and Effective Change. David, Dr. Grand, so nice to have you here on the show today.
Thanks for having me, Michelle.
This
pleasure.
It's great. What a great book. I learned so much. I'm familiar, with EMDR, and I want our audience to be more familiar with that as well. But you've taken it way beyond this eye movement theory, way beyond, and put it so practically in your book for folks to understand something that, I mean, this is revolutionary.
I like to think so, yeah.
Yeah. I hope you've patented this. It's an amazing idea.
Well, we have a patent pending. Let's put
there
it
you
that
go.
Way.
There you go. Let's just kind of jump into what this is. I know, David, that you were originally trained in the early 1980s as a psychoanalytic psychotherapist, as many of us were, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you trained extensively in the eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing technique. And that came out in probably the 80s, right? Wasn't it like
late 80s, early 90s,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's called EMDR. Listeners, you might have heard about that. They say it's new and all that because a lot of folks are not practicing it as much as the, you know, old school talk therapy techniques. And you also got into somatic experiencing. So let's talk a little bit about what the eye movement desensitization or EMDR is about and how it sort of led to your, you know, scientific founding of brain spotting.
Well, I trained in EMDR in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we were taught was that you have a client track your fingers left and right as they're thinking about the trauma and their thoughts about it and their feelings and their body experience. But I'm sort of a creator. I'm more of an artist than I am a therapist, actually.
Yeah.
So if you put a tool in my hands, I'm going to start experimenting with it right away. And one of the things I found was that when I slowed the eye movements down, people actually started to process better. Which on the one hand may seem counterintuitive, but on the other hand, healing from trauma doesn't happen by being really active. It happens by being more grounded and calm.
Right.
So the slower eye movements brought about the effect from EMDR, but I found it actually was more effective, especially with the people who are carrying more trauma or got easily overwhelmed in sessions. What this allowed me to do was to, with a slow eye movement, sometimes I'd move it really slow, was to really watch the client's eyes and face of the person I was working with. And without even knowing it, I was observing like a whole universe of reactions, reflexive reactions in the person's eyes and face, and just the facial expressions. And when I was working in 2003 with an ice skater who was a championship ice skater, and in a year she had really overcome her performance anxiety and her performance block, but she had trouble doing the triple loop, which you have to do for the compulsories. And it ironically is not the hardest jump for a championship skater to do, but for us, it's beyond our imagination.
Right.
But I was working with her around that, and I was moving my fingers back and forth, and just when I got to the bridge of her nose, her eye went to this extreme wobble and then locked up. And it felt like a hand grabbed my wrist and held it in place. And for the next 10 minutes, she went into a much deeper, active form of processing that I had seen with her an entire year. And all kinds of things that we hadn't gotten to just came up and then released. And even things we had worked through, or I thought we worked through, came up and processed through to a deeper level. Next day, she called me from the skating rink, and she was real excited, and she said, David, I just did a triple loop, no problem. And she never had a problem with it again. That was the beginning of Brain Spotting.
Wow. What a great story. Now, a lot of my listeners, you know, they love talk therapy and relationship therapy information and psychodynamic, psychoanalytic, you know, cognitive behavioral tools. Can you elaborate a little bit more on this eye movement desensitization and reprocessing? What's that about? And then sort of how did you kind of jump into, you know, an even a more profound discovery of your brain spotting?
Well, what's interesting is as much as your listeners like to talk and like the psychodynamics and all this stuff, your listeners like results too.
Sure.
Okay. And basically, when you go to see a therapist, as much as it's nice to talk and be listened to, you really want to be able to get relief and change as soon as possible. And the shorter the process of therapy, the better. What happened, again, before EMDR for me, I was basically a talk therapist, a relational therapist, insight-oriented, and all these things. And I was really very successful in what I was doing.
Sure.
So it wasn't as if I was saying, oh, boy, this isn't working out. I got to find something to work better.
Sure.
But what EMDR introduced me to was two things. The first thing was the brain-body connection to psychotherapy. Because before that, you know, I wasn't really thinking brain that much. I mean, I was thinking of it, but kind of intuitively. But I started to realize that you can actually use eye movements as an accelerant for what goes on in the brain in just being able to move through psychotherapeutically things that took much longer talking.
Really?
But the other thing that I really realized more than I ever had before was how much trauma, emotional trauma, was a part of what every one of my clients was bringing with them into sessions with me.
Right.
And so what happened is in doing EMDR, a lot of traumas that I didn't know my clients had came out. And I also saw that, so not only was there more trauma, but I saw much more quickly trauma was able to be released and processed through.
Wow.
And that was one of the real revolutionary things that EMDR brought about when it first came out and still brings about, although it really hasn't changed that much since back then. So it was more the getting into the brain and more the releasing of the trauma.
Mm. So can you briefly talk about how, you know, the process, we can just go with the eye movement desensitization. First of all, the process, what people are still probably going, well, what do you mean eye movement? But is that like hypnosis? Do you have like a charm or a target people focus on and then their eyes move? Or how does that unfold?
Basically, the therapist moves their fingers across the client's visual field, mm-hmm. and the client tracks their fingers going across.
Oh.
It does get a little bit tiring for the arm and shoulder
sure.
of the therapist.
Yeah.
So we do have a there's a light bar that someone invented where,
huh.
you know, the light goes back and forth and the person tracks their eyes back and forth.
Oh.
Basically, when your eyes move to your left, it appears that it stimulates the right brain, the opposite.
Yes.
There's
yes.
a crossover, you know.
Right.
When you tap your right hand, it goes to your left brain. So here, when you look to your right, it goes to your left brain. Then when you track back to the left, it goes to the right brain.
Yeah.
So it appears that by going back and forth, you're crossing, you know, across from left brain to right brain, back and forth, getting both hemispheres, both sides of the brain to work together more effectively.
Mm-hmm. You know, and body language studies, you know, they watch people's eyes many times, and they talk about, well, if someone's asked a question and their eyes move to the left, then that means they're recalling memory or they're really trying to figure out and recall what happened. But if their eyes look up and to the right or down and to the right, they're fabricating many times because they're creating, because this is, well, rather the opposite. If they're looking down to the left, it has to do with the right brain, so they're creating, you know, possibly a story, or they're recreating something that's going on. So so this is the same sort of concept, I guess.
Yeah. And although there are certain patterns or trends to that, everybody's mm-hmm. different. So people who really learn to read eyes know that it may be this, but there are always exceptions. So
right.
that, you know, you're looking for the exceptions as much as for the trends.
Right. So how this ties in is you went a little step further and you talked about your ice skating champion patient who you worked with, and you've worked with many other entertainers and sports stars. I know that. But you talked about the eye movement desensitization, which is the older school eye therapy. Mm-hmm. Now you've incorporated it into your new therapy called brain spotting. What is the difference between that? Let's just say, And your brain spotting. And I also want to talk about how you sort of create the scenario emotionally while the eyes are doing the moving.
Okay.
Okay.
They're not only different, but in certain ways they're opposite.
Ah.
Okay.
Okay.
This is the two ways that they're opposite.
Okay.
The more obvious one is brain spotting. We find a what we call a relevant eye position, or an eye position where a person just feels whatever that's bothering them the most.
Yes.
And we hold it in place when we have the person stare Ooh. Right at that spot.
Hmm.
So although we're using, you know, the eyes,
yeah.
instead of using the eye movement, we're using the eye fixation or the eye stillness.
Wow.
So it's really kind of an opposite process from EMDR, where it's the movement that gets the results. Here, it's the focus on that relevant eye position that gets the results.
Wow.
The other thing and I write about this extensively in my book, is EMDR is very procedural. There's a whole set of steps that you have to follow, you know, to do EMDR, and that's how it's trained.
Right.
Brain spotting is much more open and much more relational.
Huh.
I teach my trainees that the relationship comes first before the technical brain spotting, and that how the therapist listens to, is present with, and most of all attunes to the client
mm-hmm.
is the most important thing. And we know across all therapies,
mm-hmm.
that's the most powerful aspect of what works in a therapy.
Mm-hmm.
With brain spotting, we're very conscious of the relationship, and then we add the eye positions that reveal the brain positions to the relational therapy. So it's the two together
wow.
that really create the power of brain spotting, and that make it really very different from EMDR, that doesn't really talk about the relationship first and foremost.
Isn't that interesting? By the way, in case you just tuned in here on LA Talk Radio, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle and my special guest today, Dr. David Grand. He is the author of his latest book. It's called Brain Spotting, the Revolutionary New Therapy for Rapid and Effective Change. And you're listening to a wonderful revolutionary therapeutic technique. Now, I just wanted to throw this in there quickly. David, people can read your... This is not only an instructional book for therapists. I mean, it's fascinating for me, but also it is a self-help book. People can really think about what they're doing and help
yes,
themselves.
Thank mm-hmm. you. Right, the book is written for the general public,
yes.
you know, and in that, so it's really, although I'm talking about things that are complicated,
yeah.
I try to talk about them in a... in an digestible or understandable kind of way.
Right.
And there is a chapter on self-use for brain spotting, so
mm-hmm.
You can get a feel for what it's like. You can get some of the benefits from it by literally doing some of the work on your own that comes out of that chapter.
Mm-hmm. Now, in brain spotting, when you talk about focus on a particular object, I recall in my hypnotherapy personally and also when I was taking classes, you know, we're taught to encourage patients to focus on one particular object or thing in the room and, you know, allow ourselves to relax. And, of course, through the suggestions of the hypnotherapist, that really sort of changes our brain patterns. Is that similar to hypnotherapy?
It's similar, but it's only part of the way there.
Okay.
The difference with brain spotting is you don't choose something to focus on, you know, to stare at or gaze at randomly.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
We choose it extremely strategically.
Hmm.
We, you know, and we have three ways of basically finding out where those spots are.
Mm-hmm.
The most common one is literally the therapist moves their finger to or a pointer to
yeah.
three different positions
uh-huh.
to see, and the client is already activated around whatever it is they need to work on.
Yes.
And we see which in those three spots the client feels it the most. Okay,
hmm.
we're looking for literally where you get the most access in that spot, spot in the visual field, to where you feel it the most. We also go up and down because it's not just at eye level. So
right.
we're very three-dimensional about how we find it.
Yes.
So here it's like the hypnosis, except you're not just staring at any spot.
Right.
You're staring at a spot that goes directly to where the issues or the traumas are held in your brain.
Wow.
So it's like a focus within a focus.
Wow. So it's where we look, basically, and that, and different spots of focus where our eyes are looking. We're looking for. You're looking as a therapist for subtleties in the changes of the eyes.
Well, there's. I just described what I call inside window brain spotting,
right.
where we're guided by where the client feels it the most.
Mm.
The original way, the way I discovered it with the ice skater, is called outside window, where the therapist moves their finger across the client's visual field, who's thinking, not just thinking about, but really aware of and activated around whatever their problem is,
yes.
looking for clear reflexive responses in the client's eyes and face and even in the body.
Yeah.
So it's like with the ice skater, what I didn't even realize I was finding was that reflex where her eye wobbled and froze.
Mm.
But you'll see a whole universe of responses in the client's visual field as you go across, from heavy eye blinks to when the client's expression changes, to when all of a sudden they squint or all of a sudden their eyes are wide open or their
mm-hmm.
pupils dilate or constrict.
Yeah.
There are an infinite number of reflexes that you see. And when you see that reflex right in that eye position,
uh-huh.
it tells you that something is there.
Wow.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this way, this is the outside window way, the original way, we're reading the client's reflexes, which really go right down to the brainstem and even down into the spine, so that what we're picking up is so far out of the client's consciousness,
mm-hmm.
but it is what's driving whatever it is that's bothering them from the bottom up, which is really quite fascinating and powerful.
Wow. I know this sounds a little crazy, David, but, you know, many people have said, well, literally, when people can't see well, and I know, it has to do with the shape of their cornea or whatever, but there are so many anxiety disorders. I mean, there's panic blindness where people literally black out. There's,
mm-hmm.
they're awake and they're conscious and they're, you know, and they're so overwhelmed by stress, literally they go black.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, the eye and the brain are hooked up to our emotions so clearly. That you know, we can see, again, the eyes are the windows to the soul, or who we are.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? I mean...
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
What's really interesting is that we call it the visual stream, you know, or a stream of visual information that goes into the eyes, goes into the retinas, gets translated into information and sent to the back of the head to what's called the occipital cortex, where all of imagery is that goes on. But information comes into the brain in two streams, and it goes into two systems that go through all throughout the brain and then finally meet up together and come to that one image that we see and also feel. Mm. When someone has experienced a trauma, what we see is that one of those visual streams doesn't make it to the end point to connect up with the other visual stream.
Yes.
And that's where you have things like flashbacks or even the blindness you're talking about.
Yeah.
So what happens in brain spotting is when a person is on that eye position that really locks it in, the visual stream go all the way to the end and meet up together, and the person finds like their own solution to whatever it is that's bothering them.
Wow. Do you think, just aside off the topic just for a moment, something just came to my mind as well, and I know we just talked about blindness from anxiety. People who have severe nearsightedness, and do you believe that beside physiological changes in, like I said, the shape of their cornea and all that, do you think stress, anxiety, early trauma can reduce a person's vision?
Well, I'm not an expert on vision, so I can't speak with expertise of that, but I will tell you one thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's vision and there's perception, okay?
Yeah.
And your vision can be fine, but your perception can be distorted or impaired, so that literally what's coming into your eyes may be clear, but by the time it goes through the places in your brain where things are not optimally functioning, your perception actually goes off, and sometimes you can literally not perceive it as clearly. So it does affect the perception of vision, which you know, really helps us. It causes us to not see certain things as clearly.
Wow. And of course, the key word here is perception. Where are we coming from within our brains in order to interpret something through our visual field?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really profound. By the way, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle. My special guest today is Dr. David Grand. He's the author of his latest book. It's called Brain Spotting, the Revolutionary New Therapy for Rapid and Effective Change. So you establish a relationship with the patient, David. There's, you know, understanding what this person's about. And they talk about their trauma, right? They're talking about the things that they recall that are quite traumatic to them in their life. And then you have them focus, and then you work on, and they are giving you many times the verbal cues of when they are looking in certain spots, or when they're focused on, you know, something, they're telling you the feelings that are coming up that are very strong, right?
Well, because I know how powerful, you know, where we look is, I observe once a client sits down and starts talking to me, I observe where they're looking right from the beginning. And what's fascinating is that people tend to look more in one direction or another, and literally I'll see clients talking to a spot on the floor or a spot on the wall or the ceiling, and they're just locked in there, and they're not avoiding eye contact with me. They're right on that spot because something about that gives them access to what they're talking about.
Yes.
And they don't even have a conscious awareness of the fact that they're looking at the floor while they're talking, you know. But this goes actually to the third type of how we find eye positions, third type of brain spotting. It's called gaze spotting, where the therapist notices where the client gazes or looks when they're talking about what bothers them the most. And a person's eyes almost like scan the environment and just lock on right onto one spot. So I'll encourage a client to just keep on looking at that spot and to just notice mindfully wherever things go for them.
Yeah.
And that's the third way of accessing, you know, a brain position from eye position. But this goes for all of our listeners right now.
Yes.
Okay, just watch where other people are looking while they're talking, and you'll notice that people look in more direct one direction than another. And sometimes you'll notice people are just looking and talking to a spot, and they're not talking to you, but they're not avoiding you. They're looking at where they're looking because there's something there.
Wow. You know, I've had a lot of patients come in and say, I've got the stares. You know, in other words, I can't, my brain is just kind of blah today, and I'm just kind of staring, and mm-hmm. I can't stop staring. You know what I'm talking about, right? We all have the stares sometimes. Is that something to note? Is that profound? Should I say, ooh, what's this about? Or is it just that they're tired?
No, there's no such thing. Nothing comes from nowhere.
Okay.
If a client has the stares and they're staring, and sometimes it looks, we call it the 100-yard stare or the 100-mile stare. You see that a lot with veterans and other people who have, let's say, had, you know, survived tornadoes. It looks like they're just kind of gazing off and into the distance, or just like it looks like they're not there. But this is a great misconception, you know, that it's dissociation or the person's just checked out. Where they're looking is so relevant. Mm-hmm. And if a client said to me, I have the stares, I'd say just let yourself stare wherever the stares take you, mm-hmm. and let's see where your mind goes.
Wow.
Okay? It's another access point to inner experience.
Wow. Fascinating stuff. By the way, if you would like to now call in, and if you have a question for my special guest today, Dr. David Grand, or if you'd like to email me here, first of all, let me give you the number. It's 323-203-0815 here in Los Angeles locally, but you can call all over the world if you like, if you're listening. And I, of course, encourage you to email me if you're shy and you don't want to get your voice on the air. It's docmichelle with two L's at AOL.com. DocMichelle@AOL.com if you'd like to ask Dr. Grand a question about his latest book, Brain Spotting, the Revolutionary New Therapy for Rapid and Effective Change. So you're kind of like a hero, David, because you had your therapeutic technique. You were working with EMDR, and you were really getting into your new therapeutic technique around the time of the World Trade Center tragedies, and you started treating a lot of people who were, you know, traumatized, who had PTSD, so as to speak, from this, right?
Well, I had traveled around the world to Northern Ireland and Israel and Palestine doing humanitarian trainings and things like that.
Yeah.
And here on September 11th, you know, 2001, the tragedy and the trauma visited my backyard, you know, as it did for all New Yorkers.
Yeah.
And my office is right in Manhattan.
Oh, boy.
And, you know, I mean, I was fine. I was safe. But what happened was, you know, I didn't have to travel to do any humanitarian work.
Right.
There were hundreds and thousands of people who were directly and indirectly affected. You know, most of all, people in the buildings, people around the buildings, rescue workers, you know, first responders, and people who lost family members in the buildings. So there was an instantaneous need for trauma therapy and trauma services. And myself, among many, many others, we became a circle of healing for people who just, you know, had their lives shattered in, you know, on that one day.
Yeah.
And I did hundreds and hundreds of hours of pro bono sessions, I mean, primarily with firefighters and police, and, you know, also with other people in the buildings, and family members, which is a different kind of thing when you lose somebody. But we saw how people could be given their lives back. There were people who were still stuck right on that day, in that moment, in that place, that we brought back to the present. And
my gosh,
you know, anyhow, it was a life changing experience for me. I actually, after a year of doing this, I had collected so much of the trauma in my own filter, you know, so to speak, that I didn't realize how affected I was. You know, sort of, you're the last one to know when you're a therapist who's just been overloaded.
Right.
And when I realized it, I realized that I was, like, missing things. It was really quite startling to me. And I had to figure out, well, what am I going to do? And, I mean, I did go for my own sessions, but I decided I was going to write a play about my experiences.
Oh, wow.
And over the next 3 months, I just wrote and wrote and wrote, and I wrote a play about a therapist who sees all these 9/11 survivors.
Oh, wow.
And I actually based the three survivors who were in the play on real people, and literally a lot of the exact words that they had said to me.
Yeah.
So So that was my 9/11 experience, and that was my 9/11 healing as well.
Oh, bless your heart. That's amazing. You are a hero. You're one of the heroes.
You want to know something, and you know this, Michelle.
Yeah.
The true heroes don't see themselves as heroes and never call themselves heroes.
Right.
The people that call themselves heroes ain't the heroes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it brings about humility in you, you know?
That's right.
Instead of feeling your greatness, you feel more your humbleness in the face of what you're facing. Plus, when you're working with people who have survived, you're encountering their survival abilities, their strength, their resilience, and it's really very inspiring. And you know within yourself that they're the true heroes.
Yes, yes, it's so true. I am right on with you. I am right on with you, David. We have an email. Checking out right now, and it's in line with the next question I was going to ask you, because at the top of the show, I was sharing with listeners how your brain spotting technique has and is still helping athletes as well as entertainers. This is from Josh. And he said, "Dear Doc, I am a semi-pro tennis player. I need to overcome some new setbacks in my game. Why am I having this at age 27 when I've been playing since I was 9 years old? Do you think..." Okay, this is a good one. I love this. "Do you think that I never got over my dad's abuse? Why is this happening now?"
Well, I'll start with a general and work to the specific.
That's heavy.
I just got off the phone working with a catcher, a D1, that's Division I catcher, who was a super athlete who lost his ability to throw the ball back to the pitcher, which is really, really common. Mm. It started with Mackie Sasser, who was a catcher on the Mets, who just, you know, couldn't throw the ball back to the pitcher.
Yeah.
And actually, my previous book, This Is Your Brain on Sports, chronicles his story.
Yes.
In Brain Spotting, in my new book, Chapter 11 addresses how brain spotting works with athletes and performance blocks and even performance enhancement.
Yeah.
The question now, the email is right on target, because what trauma interrupts all of us in all of our lives and all of our endeavors, including athletes. And it's one of the things that's just not known. Sports psychologists are just not attuned to trauma. You'll find two levels of trauma that affect athletic performance. Mm-hmm. The first one is life trauma, especially childhood trauma.
Yeah.
And the second are the traumas that happen to us in the sport that we're playing, which primarily are sports injuries, but secondarily are sports failures, sports humiliations.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is, if you had an abusive, if your father was abusive to you in your childhood, it's in your brain, it's in your nervous system, and when you go out to play tennis, okay, you're carrying it with you out on the court, even if you have absolutely no idea about it. And when there's a breakdown in your play, if something about a certain play just goes right through the area in your brain that's holding the abuse memories from your father, you literally cannot hit the ball in the same way, and you may hit it into the net, you may just hit a crazy shot, or you just may lose your power. Mm. So the answer to the question is absolutely, definitely yes. And in my book, again, we have the self-health chapter. So the gentleman, tennis player who sent in the email, could really just not only read chapter 11 about sports, but read the self-health chapter and do some of these exercises in a safe kind of way that would probably help liberate him a little bit.
Oh, gosh, yes. It sounds like it. Thank you so much, Josh, for emailing us. And by the way, it wouldn't hurt him to pick up your other book, too, your earlier book, one of your earlier books, about the professional catcher. I mean,
This is Your Brain on Sports.
This is
They're
your
both
brain
available
on
Amazon. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's fascinating. So, Dave, do you think that that's the reason why Tiger lost his mojo for a little while?
I'll tell you something. I could give you a case story, but I'm not gonna take up the rest of the show doing this.
Yeah.
I knew that Tiger Woods was ready for a fall when nobody else was,
because
I saw how brittle and how aggressive he was.
Oh, yeah.
He was not in the place that an athlete is, where they have grace.
Yes.
You know, and they can turn it on and turn it off. I knew he was ready for a fall, and I'll tell you something.
Yeah.
He's temporarily made it back to the top, okay, although he hasn't won a major since his fall.
Yeah.
he hasn't worked out his problems. All you got to do is look at his eyes, look at his behavior, and he. I'm not saying he's in the exact same place, but he is still carrying his wounds, his trauma, his confusion out with him, and because of that, every time he takes a swing, in a subtle way, he's fighting himself. You know, like any other athlete who has, you know, personal and sports trauma. So just watch. He's back up again, but unless he really gets into his problems, he's not going to stay there.
Yes. So, Tiger, if you're listening, give David Grand a call and pick up his book, please. How's that? You know what? We're just about out of time already. And, oh, my goodness, there's so much more to cover. But if you would like to hear a lot more about brain spotting, you can, of course, pick up the book. Dave, what's the best way for people to contact you and get a hold of your book?
The book is available. The publisher is Sounds True, so soundstrue.com, or directly, you know, also Amazon.com are the best ways to buy the book. It is available on Kindle and download as well. Anybody who wants to get more information about brain spotting can go right to my website, which is brainspotting.com. And from there, if there's a way you can actually send a question or information in through the website, that will get directly to me. So I am accessible.
Oh, that's beautiful. And by the way, in case you just kind of tuned in a little late and you wanted more information, the show will be available for down, you know, you can reload, you can listen, you can replay, you can download. Of course, we're on iTunes and, of course, the new TalkTube app. All my shows are available if you want to listen to them. They'll be up and ready to go this weekend if you want to listen to this again. But pick up the book, guys. It's great. Dr. David Graham, thank you so much for being such a terrific guest here on the couch. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure, Michelle.
Thank you so much for being there for others and for discovering this technique.
Okay. Great. Right. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right. Once again, Dr. David Graham, what a great, great book. A lot of people can really get help from that. I think we're closing up the number here. There we are. Okay. Listen, guys, if you have any questions, you can email me, docmichelle@aol.com, docmichelle with two L's at AOL.com. If you'd like to find out more about this, of course, you can go on to Channel 1 right here on my website on LA Talk Radio and find out how to get a hold of the book and find out more about the technique, too, because it's amazing. All right, y'all have a wonderful day, and I hope that you all take care of each other. And don't forget, do take care of yourself first before anybody else, because that's the way it works. That's how you can help others. All right, have a great day. We have another fabulous guest next week. We're going to be talking about relationships and cleaning up your act. Guys, have a great day. Bye-bye.